Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com. So, Steve, we were talking earlier about this thing that I call the big mystery. Mm-hmm. And I remember back in my heavy addiction days, and I've worked with guys all over the world, and they all have this same frustration, same similar kind of frustration. So, Mark, I don't understand. I give into this addiction. I go and act out. And after I'm done, I'm like, what in the heck happened? And they're pounding their fist on the desk. They're declaring this as that is the last time I will ever do that. Ever. And they're convinced that I'm done. No more. Yep. And then 2 minutes or 2 hours or 2 days or 2 weeks or 2 months later, they're right back in the same place doing the same thing that they declared they would never do again. And it's this crazy place of frustration and confusion and hopelessness. And with me, even drove me, you know, many years ago to the place of even putting a gun to my head. And it's what we call the big mystery. Why do I do that? Why can't I just say no one final time? I should be able to just make the decision.
Totally. Well, it's, I mean, it is total insanity. It's literal insanity when you think about it, right?
Right.
We're all familiar with that way popular, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. And among other things, isn't that what we, every time, and I know that I've gone through that myself, as have you, it's one of those things where you just, you get to that point in your thinking, and you get far enough into the addiction where somehow you think that this time it'll be different.
It's going to be different. Yep. This time's going to be different.
Every other time has ruined my life, my marriage, everything else. But today, today it'll be different.
And we'll talk more about, you know, what it means to be in recovery and how some, for some reason, the survival addict, you know, pleasure-seeking brain, escaping brain doesn't want to deal with the fact that there's going to be some work involved. There's got to be a process and steps and all the rest of it. And we'll do that in future podcasts. But today, you know, our whole purpose today is to unravel this mystery. Why do I keep going back to something that is destroying my life, creating so many problems that I, even to the, even in many ways, I disdain it. I despise it. I don't want to be involved with it, but I keep going back.
Yeah.
And so today we're going to solve the mystery. By the time you're done listening to this podcast, no more mystery.
Healed.
Well, I didn't say that because there was many, many years that I didn't have the mystery anymore, and but I was still acting out. And by, when I was done, I could tell you the neurochemicals that were releasing, where they were releasing.
Yep.
I could take you through a play-by-play, step-by-step process. There was no mystery whatsoever. Absolutely. But I was still doing it.
But it is a starting point. Knowledge is power.
At least we can start by unraveling the mystery. So it's like, okay, I got that pretty clear now. It's no longer mysterious.
Absolutely.
So with that introduction, let's launch into and let's unravel this thing one step at a time.
Sounds great.
How does this addiction work? Let's start from the beginning and go right on through.
Okay. So we're going to introduce a couple of concepts that we're going to refer to throughout the rest of the podcast, but we wanted to just kind of give a quick little intro into each one so that you guys know what we're referring to. You can find diagrams for both of these, the addiction cycle, which is what I'm going to talk about here in a minute, and then Mark's funnel here in a couple minutes after that. Those can both be found at pbscpodcast.com under the resources tab. So you can actually have diagrams to look at what we're talking about here. So with that in mind, we'll go ahead and we'll start with just the addiction cycle. So the addiction cycle model is taken from a man named Patrick Carnes. He's regarded by many as kind of the world authority on sexual addiction. He's the gentleman who I did my CSAT, Certified Sex Addiction Therapist, training through. He was talking about, you know, sex being an addiction or potentially being an addiction back in the 80s when everybody thought that you couldn't even be addicted to sex and that was impossible. And then the internet happened, and that changed everything. So this is kind of a longstanding model that he's had, and it's been tweaked and changed over the years, but we're just going to go through the basics of it today. So there's four main steps to the addiction cycle. And actually, I should back up. There's technically a fifth. Before you get into the four main steps, there's always, as is going to be the case with the funnel, as Mark's going to explain in a second, there's always an initiating, what we call a trigger, right? Now, most of you who are listening by this point probably know what a trigger is, but just so we're on the same page, a trigger is just anything in your environment that elicits your brain to go from a place of just normal, healthy functioning. You know, you're going through your day, you're going to work, you know, getting the kids ready for school, whatever, to something happening. And it's just kind of a snap reaction oftentimes, where sometimes it's more obvious, sometimes not, but where the brain shifts from that place of normalcy, if you will, into a place of beginning to obsess and to what I call going on the hunt, quote unquote. So I'm now in this seeking mode where I'm starting to look for something in my environment that can pull me further down into the addiction cycle. So it's like having chum kind of put in the water. We'll talk more about triggers another day, and I think we have already in other recent episodes, but they generally come as either emotional triggers or the more blatant sexual ones. But both end up leading to the same place. Once we go through experience that trigger, then we're immediately pushed into this preoccupation place. So this is where we haven't yet, you know, technically acted out, quote unquote, in our addiction. We haven't done anything of that nature, but it's on our brain. We have sex on the brain, right? For lack of a better term. As the addiction cycle progresses and we move more into the second main step, that is what Patrick Carnes refers to as called ritualizing. So ritualizing is kind of a catch-all term that's used to describe anything that's happening in your environment or things that you are doing specifically as part of your addiction or part of the, you know, the process you go through before you act out that reinforces the addiction as well as deepens your focus in on it. And again, we're going to talk about all these more in depth as we go through. Third section is the actual acting out, right? So the pornography, the masturbation, the other forms of use, although porn fits multiple categories. Again, we'll talk about that in a second. And then the last stage is very much reminiscent of what Mark described at the beginning of the podcast, right? It's the pain, remorse. Oh my gosh, what was I thinking? That was insane. Why did I go back? I can't believe I did this again, right? And it's going through that whole section. And then that's usually accompanied, I also refer to that last piece of the cycle as the blood oath cycle. This is usually where we make all sorts of crazy promises that we're, you know, never going to ever act out ever again. And here's all the reasons why and how. Some of which are great commitments. Others are kind of unrealistic and pies in the sky. But anyway, we're going to get into all of that. So that's the first half of this equation.
Yeah. And so the addiction cycle is really sound an amazing way to talk about it. I love Patrick. Worked with him years ago, and we actually did some training and speaking together. And he's an amazing man. Kind of, I call him the godfather of the whole sexual addiction movement.
Yeah.
And the way I talk about it actually came from another great psychologist, my mentor, Dr. Paige Bailey. And he taught me what I call the addiction or the sexual funnel. And so if you imagine in your mind the shape of an hourglass, so it's wide at the top, and then it narrows down to this little tiny passageway in the middle and then widens out again at the bottom. And so Steve talked about those triggers. So there's something that triggers in my life that causes me to feel the need to go and seek escape. Medication, soothing, avoiding, feeling better, seeking pleasure. And we call that going into the funnel. And once I hit into the top of that funnel or that hourglass, really powerful neurochemicals start releasing in my brain. Things like dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, oxytocin, endorphins, you know, our body's own natural morphine. All of those chemicals start releasing, and it moves my brain down that funnel. And as I head down in the funnel, I go into a more and more narrow place. Brain starts to close out everything around me, closes out thoughts of my family, my marriage, consequences, my future, even legal consequences disappear in that narrowing process, until finally, when I get down into that really narrow part in the middle of that hourglass or funnel, I've blocked out all of it. And my brain is intent on getting to one place, that climax, right? That conclusion, whatever that might be with regard to my addiction. But typically it's ejaculation and climax, which is the final part of that process. So I move down through the funnel, everything's blocked out, you know, and then I get to that place of climax. And then when that's over, my brain emerges from that narrow place. All of those chemicals start to dissipate and essentially go away, disappear. And now my brain returns to its, quote, normal functioning. And then the bottom of the funnel is where all of the consequences hit me, because now I can think straight again. And that's what I call the dialogue from hell. What was I thinking? What was I doing? Oh my gosh, I can't believe what I just sacrificed and gave up. I've done it again. I can't believe it. And often that kind of hopelessness and confusion will then motivate me, trigger me to then go and head back into the top of the funnel and do it all again. Because the first time, you know, it didn't quite do it. Now I have the solution to all of my problems and how horrible I'm feeling in the bottom of the funnel. And I know the solution is to go try it again. This time it will solve everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you can get stuck in that cycle, you know, around and around for years, decades, and a lifetime. So that's the funnel.
Awesome.
So addiction cycle and funnel. We're going to refer to both of those as we go through the steps now.
Awesome. So yeah, so I and Mark was the one who coined this funnel concept. He's talked about it in other books that he's written, as well as in the Pornography Paradox, which we co-authored. And when I talk to clients, because I will use the funnel concept with clients when they come in, probably the best way that I have found to visualize this is, some of you might remember back in the day, maybe they still even have these, I don't know, but in like fast food restaurants and things, there used to be these charity coin, like big funnel things. You know what I'm talking about, Mark, where you can put the coin in and like watch it circle around the funnel.
Yeah. In museums, right? And places you'd see those.
Yeah.
It goes around and around until finally it disappears in the hole.
Yeah. And if you were like me, I was a cheapskate. So I'd wait until it got to the bottom and then grab it again and put it back over the top. Right? But that's a really good analogy for me with how the funnel tends to work. You know, when we first put that coin into that funnel, and the coin is slowly circling outside the wide ridge, right? We've got and Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've got a good grip on reality at that point, right?
At first, yeah.
Yeah. And then as we start to move around it, right? Which, if we're going to kind of start combining these concepts, you know, the steps between preoccupation and ritualizing, just like all the other steps in the addiction cycle, are, you know, somewhat just kind of nebulous in terms of, you know, one just bleeds into the other. They aren't like distinct, necessarily separate parts. When I think about the funnel, that's where I think about that mix of preoccupation and ritualizing happening, right? So as I'm starting to narrow, I'm engaging, not only am I starting to just consider the option of acting out that preoccupation stage, but now I'm bringing on board again, these other, what would we call them? Rituals. There's not a better word for it, right? these other behaviors, right?
Yeah, that reinforce. Let's give the listeners an example of preoccupation moving into ritualization. Like, how exactly does it work?
Sure. Okay.
So let me give an example to lead Perfect. You into that. So Love we talked it. About the fact that there are some kind of triggers that typically put my survival, you know, pleasure seeking brain kind of kicks in for it to start this process. Yeah. I like to call that I'm blasted. There's something going on in my life that blasts me, and that's an acronym, BLHAST, BLAST. And the B is for bored or burned out, L is lonely, H is hungry, A is angry, anxious, or afraid, S is stressed, and T is tired.
Mm.
That pretty much covers them.
Mm.
So I'm blasted in some way, and that then sends my brain into this now needing a solution, needing to to find an answer to this discomfort that I'm experiencing, whatever form it takes. So now I start preoccupying.
So the blasted piece.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, man.
No, go ahead and talk about preoccupation and ritualization, Ben.
No. I mean, what you're describing, it sounds, you know, as you're talking about blasted, because I use a similar acronym in my office as well. And when I look at the blasted list, you know, that bored, lonely, hungry, angry, stressed, tired model, I think of, you know, these are not only triggers, right, that push us into the sexual addiction cycle or start us down the funnel, but they are also oftentimes the things that can actually reinforce it, right? If I am, for example, if I am sexually triggered, a good example of this would be, you know, statistically, there's research that shows that acting out sexually, at least, happens most frequently either in the late evening or early morning hours.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably a lot of reasons for that, but one of them is because of, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the brain today. The smarter part of your brain, right, is not as active. The prefrontal cortex isn't as active, or at least in the correct way. And you're not operating from as an intelligent of a place, essentially. And so you've got these other things that push you into being triggered, right, or push you into these cycles. So either, you know, being bored or lonely, like you said, angry, some other emotion that you're seeking to escape. But then it gets paired with, you know, it's late at night, I'm staying up longer than I should have, I'm not keeping the boundaries I set for myself or with my spouse, right? I'm engaging in, I'm just cruising through the TV channels, right? That's a definite part of that kind of ritualizing that you're talking about, right? They're behaviors that reinforce. So like flipping through TV channels, for example, could be both, right? It could be the trigger that gets us into that preoccupation ritualizing stage, but it can also be the mechanism through which we kind of move through those first few stages as we start to move simultaneously towards the the narrow neck of that funnel you described.
Yeah, that's actually a great example. So that, you know, it's late at night, let's say my wife's gone to bed, I'm kind of bored after a long day, kind of tired, maybe I'm feeling some entitlement, you know, I've worked hard today, I deserve a break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm feeling a little lonely because maybe we weren't getting along the greatest and she just went off to bed. So here's all these triggers hitting me. And now I start to have these little thoughts about, you know, sexual things, little urges, little images in my head, whatever it is. And then I think, you know what, I'm just going to turn on the TV and see what's on.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've started into what we call my ritual.
Yes.
And I like to say that survival part of us, that little survival brain, is really crafty.
Oh, yeah.
It's sophisticated and shrewd. And it will be leading you into that funnel and down that path before you even know consciously that it's happening. Mm. Well, no, I'm just turning on the TV. That's not bad. That can't be part of my ritual. Turning on the television? Give me a break. Oh, no. Yeah. Let me tell you, that part of your brain's already started you down the path. And now let me just click around and see what's there. So now I'm channel surfing.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of my ritual. I'm not looking for anything. I'm just searching here.
Yeah.
And there in the back of your head, there's part of you that's just hoping that you'll catch a glimpse of something.
Sure.
And as soon as you do, now you've gone one step farther in the funnel in your ritualization, right?
Yep. Well, and this is where the insanity starts to set in, right? And a lot of those character defects or thinking errors, in many cases, mm-hmm. kind of come into play, right? We're almost playing victim to the TV. Well, if I flip through all 55,000 of my cable channels and nothing comes up that's triggering at 3 a.m, then I guess it was meant to be.
Right, yeah.
That I didn't act out. But if it does, you know, I'm almost kind of victim to it. You know, there's something that we probably ought to mention here, too, about triggers and the these cycles that we're talking about in general. There isn't really a time frame, right, tied to these cycles. These can be really short. Sometimes we move through the cycle so quick or through the funnel so fast that we almost don't even kind of see what's happening. Other times, these can last over the course of days, weeks. I worked with guys whose cycle, so to speak, will oftentimes be months.
Yes.
You know, I think of one guy that I worked with years and years ago who his addiction cycle to completely move through it, to completely move through that funnel process was probably about 3 or 4 months. What would happen was he would plan his own business trips.
Yes.
Because he was, you know, in a prominent position with who he worked for. And so he'd plan out these business trips. And for weeks and months in advance, he would get online and look at what seedier parts of town he could get a hotel in, or, yes. you know, what other sketchy things were around and he would picture and fantasize for months, right, about the things that could happen while he was out there, the potential, right, the possibilities.
Well, and here's the insidious part of that kind of ritualization, because I've had clients like that as well. And I even had some of those experiences in my old addiction days. Mm-hmm. You're right. You can have months of ritualization, but from a neuroscience standpoint, here's the deal. If I know that I'm going to have this business trip, you know, 90 days from now, and it's going to be this culmination of my entire fantasy, I'm going to go to, you know, this special strip club or this special part of town with an escort or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The thing about that process, as soon as I start thinking about that, and especially as I start seeing it in my mind, something that isn't going to happen for 3 months, but I'm starting to visualize it, my brain will start to release those same powerful neurochemicals in that funnel. Mm-hmm. Just for the fact that I'm thinking about what will happen or yeah. what might happen or could happen. So fantasy or planning or ritualizing starts to release amounts of dopamine and norepinephrine and serotonin and endorphins.
Absolutely.
I'm already in the funnel.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
as you said, you know, picture this giant funnel with that penny spinning around slow on mm-hmm. the outside rim, and it's just slow. You're in the funnel, but it's slowly building momentum. And the closer I get to the, you know, going on my business trip, the faster that coin starts going.
And yeah.
But I've been in the funnel the whole time.
Sure.
I've actually been getting some relief. My stressed brain has actually been getting relief from being blasted. Even at that early stage, I'm starting to feel better totally. Just because I'm thinking about it.
Totally.
That's crazy. You're just whoa, you mean like 3 months in advance, I'm already starting to feel the drug-like effects of what I'm going to do? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, when I think about the funnel diagram, because you and I have talked about this a ton over the years, when I look at the two sides, if you will, of the funnel, right, those two narrowing sides, if we look at it from like a side view, I've actually done this in my office. I've labeled one side logic and the other side reason, or like wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. And as this narrowing effect's happening, it's not just the focusing in, right, but it's literally I progressively become more crazy.
Yeah, the progressively, loss of, right.
And it, yeah. And literally just a loss.
And a lot of people have said, well, it's because the prefrontal cortex, the logic center, the CEO part of your brain stops working. Mm-hmm. That is not true from a neuroscience standpoint. It does not stop working. The logic centers of my brain are fully active. But here's the crazy part. It's who's in the driver's seat.
Yeah. And
what happens in that funnel is that the pleasure-driven, ego-driven, you know, survival part of my brain, it actually takes over, and the CEO logic center of the brain follows its orders.
Yeah.
That's the crazy part. It's not that you're, you know, the part in your forehead quit working. A lot of people say that. Not true. It's just taking orders now. Well, survival brain, pleasure brain, addict brain, what would you like me to do next?
Sure.
Well, Logic Center, let's start planning this whole trip out in minute details 3 months in advance. Okay, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We'll do that.
Yeah.
It's like it's been completely hijacked.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see the logic behind that. And so using your vernacular, the CEO is still there. He's just drunk off his tail.
Yeah, he's now working for the mail clerk.
Yes, absolutely. Switch roles, right? Yeah, well, and as we look at the cycle, right, and how it progresses, I mean, because it does progress, right? We always know that. The addiction cycle and the funnel, in theory, you can break out of both of these cycles at any point, right? I mean, there's always...
In theory.
In theory, right? But what is true of both of these cycles, even though they are a little different, and when they're happening simultaneously, is that the ability to break free from them becomes progressively more difficult, right? The further down you go.
Yep. The further down you go into that funnel or the cycle, it becomes virtually impossible.
Sure. I mean, you get to that point, right, of acting out where, and again, that's kind of nebulous, right? Like, so for example, in Karn's cycle, porn would be both a ritualizing behavior as well as actual acting out, right? Coupled True. With masturbation or Could something else, right? And so, you've got these two, you've got this process that's working on multiple levels. And when you're getting into, the movement towards the end of the cycle, right, you've got the actual acting out, right, which you described, right? That's the climax, that's the ejaculation, that's the orgasm, right?
Right.
And then immediately, just like with the funnel example, you get spit out the other side of this addiction cycle, right? And that's where that unnarrowing widening of the brain,
the
I guess we
unnarrowing
could call it.
Yes, that is the widening of the brain.
Sure.
And that's where the survival, you know, pleasure driven addict part of the brain that cares nothing. A lot of people will ask me, well, Mark, so why is it that when I go into this funnel, all of my logic and reasoning, all the future consequences, everybody I care about, I like to say you throw everyone and everything that matters to you under the bus.
Mm.
Why? How? That seems impossible. And the reason is in that narrowing process, it's the part of your brain that has taken over. It isn't that it doesn't care about those things. That's not where thoughts of those things are stored in the brain.
Sure.
You're a part of the brain that doesn't even have those priorities and that reasoning and logic. That's not the part of the brain in charge.
Sure.
So it isn't that you weren't thinking about those things. It's that you couldn't. You cannot have logic and reasoning and future consequences and love for my wife and all of these things. You can't.
Sure.
Because that part of the brain is not the part that's in charge.
Absolutely. I had a guy come into my office just recently who said, you know, very similar to what we've heard many times over the years and what you and I used to say. He said, I honestly, we were talking about a recent relapse. He's just, honestly, I don't know what I was thinking. And I just looked at him and I didn't even hesitate. And I said, well, you weren't.
You right? weren't.
You weren't. I mean, you literally weren't.
And as I just said, and it's worse than that, you couldn't.
Sure. Sure.
The decision making was not once you were in the funnel. The decision to be made is at the point where you're considering whether to go in there or not.
Sure.
That's the place of choice. I like to say when you head into that funnel, you give up your ability to choose. So be very yeah. careful before you leap in.
Well, wouldn't you say it becomes kind of gradually compromised as you go through? That's how I would kind of.
Although, right? Boy, it can happen so fast.
That's true.
Here's what guys will do. Here's what the addict ego brain starts saying, well, okay, Mark. So what I'll do is I'll just sort of hang out on the edge of the funnel. I'll toy with it and I'll step in and then I'll step back out. I can manage that process.
Sure.
Because it's gradual. My loss of choice is gradual. So I'll just sort of hang out on the lip, on the edge. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. How many guys have you heard say that?
Oh, gosh. Many.
And how many times were they able to just flirt around with the edge and not go in?
Yeah, yeah, I've probably heard it from about as many guys as I thought it myself.
So you're right. It is progressive, but the trick with that is that it can happen so fast. It's like, bam.
Yeah. Well, you get to that kind of point of, yeah, you get to that point of no return, right? That's kind of what we're talking about. That point of just like, you know, in theory, you could always stop like we were talking about, but once you get to that kind of point of no return, it's almost like, you know, unless there's going to be some sort of, I don't know, angelic, otherworldly intervention right there at that moment. I mean, I guess if, you know, Peter showed up and slapped me and told me to knock it off, I might have a chance, but.
Or sometimes we get that interrupted, you know, somebody walks in at the wrong moment or
yes,
something gets interrupted. And the way you know, that's one of the signs that you're truly caught in addiction is when that happens, you don't feel relieved. You feel ticked off.
Yes. How and you dare, get back to right? it right as quick as you can, right?
As soon as the opportunity comes again.
Yep.
It's like you've just been,
pause button.
You've just been saved and all you are is frustrated and
oh, can't wait
to go back and be uninterrupted as soon as possible.
So true. Absolutely. Well, and that makes total sense, right? With what we're talking about, because again, the brain doesn't want to think about those consequences, mm-mm, right? And if we're talking about pornography, for example, this is kind of going to kind of help to tie all this in from what we've talked about in past podcasts. You know, the allure with pornography is that there is, you know, at least much of the pornography out there, the typical profile is there's as little information about reality as possible.
Yes.
Right. You don't know anything about the actress. You don't know, or actor. You don't know anything about what sad story or sad series of events put them in this position of performing this way. You don't know, you know, the drug habits or the compulsions that they have or the trauma that they've endured or any of those things, right? It's the furthest thing from what they put in those videos because
nobody
it does,
talks. There's no mention of the families they came from or anything along the way that got them in that place. The question is, why don't you see any of those things?
It's exactly what we're talking about.
Because the reason is if suddenly those kinds of things were to start to show up, that part of your brain that cares about those things, that can logic and reason through that, would come back into the driver's seat.
Yep.
That's the last thing that pornographers want to have happen.
Absolutely.
So they keep all of that out of the equation.
Yes. And in future podcasts, we're going to talk about ways to do just that.
To bring it back. Yeah.
Yep,
to bring yourself back.
Absolutely.
You know, you said something interesting. there comes this place where you said a point of no return.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so far down in the funnel that there's no way I'm going to get back out of there. I'm just going to go all the way through and act out.
Yeah.
The crazy part about that is I found, and I remember back with my addiction days and a lot of the guys I work with, that point of no return can actually happen fairly early in the ritualization process. It's what I like to call the point of inevitability. There's something, little voice in my brain, some little switch that flips that says, this is inevitable. Even if it's early in the process, I know that I am not going to stop until I complete this.
Yeah.
And you talk to guys and I'll ask them, do you know that little voice or flip that switches that says, yep, I'm going all the way through it. It could be a week and a half before you actually act out what you've planned. But suddenly that little feeling in your brain says, nope, no going back. I will not be deterred. I will not be prevented. And the strange inevitability feeling that comes to you, like there's no way out. There's no way out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and yeah, I mean, as you look at this, the cycle, I mean, that's the, you know, whether we're calling it the funnel or we're looking at it through the cycle model, they both have the same thing in common is that unless we do something concrete, right, to break that pattern, we're inevitably going to go back into it. It isn't a question of if, it's just really a question of when. If we're
question
talking
of pragmatic. When, and the reason part of unraveling this mystery is to realize that addiction is nothing more than learning in the brain.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yes.
I call it hyper learning. And what I learn is that when life becomes unmanageable, I become blasted in any number of ways. My brain learns typically when we're kids. And I remember as a young kid being first exposed to pornography and getting that first feeling from it. My brain figured out really quick, oh, wow, here's a solution to all the stuff that is happening that feels bad in my life. And once my brain took those unpleasantries, those triggers in my life, and linked them to the solution of pornography or masturbation, and tied those two things together, I like to say that's when my addiction started.
Mm.
The solution, the problem linked to the solution, and the brain learned, yep, I know exactly where to go. Every time something gets uncomfortable or embarrassing or awkward or lonely or whatever, I know right where to go. And the brain learns that that's what it does. And it's reliable, it's accessible, it's immediate. I mean, think of all the things that those solutions do to give the brain the magic answer.
Sure.
And once it learns that, once it ties all that together, that learning is deeply etched.
Yeah, it's just another manifestation of how, you know, this addiction and others like it, you know, in many ways, they bastardize, they hijack, whatever vernacular you want to use, right? These God-given, really amazing parts of the brain.
Yeah.
You know, the brain's ability to adapt, the brain's ability to, you know, when I get up in front of sometimes I'll talk about it in this context, I mean, very similar to your story. When we first get into addiction, right, I can actually remember the first time I acted out pretty vividly with masturbation. And I remember getting into that. Again, everyone's story is different, but I remember that for me, that I obsessed over and agonized over both of those things for, I think, a couple of days.
Yeah.
After seeing a lot of pornography, because I'd been watching pornography or accessing pornography in different forms for a while. And I remember leading up to that, there was a real decision-making process. But the thing of it is, right, every time we go through that process, like you're talking about, because of the amazingness of the brain and its ability to adapt and to push things into the subconscious and to be able to learn, like you're saying, there was less of a choice to be made each time I would go through. It would become more automatic. The way I look at it is it would become more slipstreamed, if you will, right? Like once you just hit into that cycle, it was just kind of your brain off to the races. And it's that same, in many ways, it's those same mechanisms. Like if you and I are presenting at a retreat or at a conference, you know, we're up in front of on the whiteboard with clients or whatever. It's that same mechanism that allows us to talk, walk, draw right on the board all at the same time, right? That facilitates this addiction process.
Yeah.
And it's this total hijacking of this good God-given thing. And so a big part of recovery, and we're going to talk more about this like many other things another day, is going to be how do we slow down, right, this cycle? How do we slow down this funnel? How do we take ourselves back to more of that place of it becoming an active choice and living deliberately? We kind of talked about that in other podcast episodes, as opposed to living in that cruise control place.
Yep.
Because as we've talked about, addiction thrives on cruise control. Loves it.
Well, it's the natural tendency of the brain. The brain wants to take everything and make it automatic as quickly as possible.
Sure.
Because that's efficient. If I got into my car, every time I got into my car, I said, well, what is this round thing? And what are those pedals on the floor? And sure. I had to learn everything over again. You'd never get anything done. You'd be overwhelmed. So the brain says, I want to turn anything that's useful in my life into auto robotic behavior as quickly as I can. So I don't have to think about it and I can move on to learn something else.
Yeah. I mean, the bigger picture here, right, is taking our sexual history and it's learning, you know, we're not just talking breaking free from the cycle per se, but the overall recovery path, as I look at it, you know, we kind of globalize these concepts. It isn't just removing ourselves from the funnel, removing ourselves from the cycle. It's about living your sexuality in a deliberate way, right? Because that's an area of the addiction that we don't always necessarily talk about. I mean, it's destructive and horrible for us individually, for our families, for all those things that we've mentioned many times. But the worst part of it is, in my book, this is honestly the worst part, is that I'm not even choosing. I'm not choosing to ruin my life. I'm not choosing to give up on my marriage. I'm not choosing to do any of those things. What I'm doing is I'm pulling out the white flag and I'm surrendering in a negative way over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so those things aren't things that I'm choosing. They're slowly slipping away.
Yes.
What a tragedy.
Yeah. because your brain's been completely rewired and restructured and is now dominated by its own habits.
Yes.
And you no longer get to choose, you know, because people will, you know, people who don't experience addiction will say, well, you just need to decide. Why don't you just say no? Mm-hmm. Obviously you don't want it bad enough or you would just say no.
Yes.
And what they don't realize is I lost the ability to do that a long time ago, early in the addiction process.
Yep.
Now, the good news is, you know, on this podcast is that doesn't mean that you're a lost cause or everything's hopeless and there's no way to turn around. That isn't true.
Yeah.
And I like to say the same kind of process that got you into this addiction can get you out.
Mm-hmm.
There's this beautiful thing called neuroplasticity. And it means that your brain is moldable, shapeable, changeable. The same neuroplasticity that built this addiction can also build something different.
Yep.
Now we'll talk about the steps and the processes that allow you to do that, because it isn't just as simple as saying no and suddenly, you know, going down a different track.
Mm-hmm.
Willpower is not enough. In fact, in many ways, willpower works against you and deepens your addiction. But I like to say it's not about will, it's about skill.
Sure.
And we can teach you the skills to literally mold your own mind. You can't recover with the brain you have today. We have to help you build a new brain.
Sure. Absolutely. So knowledge is power, right? But only if we implement it. So if we're looking at this, like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, if you go to pbscpodcast.com, and that's pbscpodcast.com, under the resources tab, you're going to see diagrams for both of these. And like we do every week, we're going to give you guys an assignment, something to kind of work on. The more you can be in tune with this cycle, and this applies both for the addicts out there as well as spouses, the better acquainted you both are with this cycle and how it works, the better you are going to be able to support your own recovery or that of your spouse. Because oftentimes, like we're going to talk about further, and like we mentioned briefly, the real power to knowing about this stuff is recognizing it as early on as possible, so that you can catch your real recovery. Doesn't involve never getting stuck in the cycle or never getting pulled into the funnel. Real recovery means the minute the coin goes into the funnel, the minute I move into preoccupation, I'm able to recognize it and use good coping skills, techniques, recovery tools to get out. So with that in mind, what you'll want to do is, just like I said, you can pull up the diagrams for this on our website. And once you've pulled up both of those, it would be a great, you know, we've already got you guys doing couples check-ins, or you can even do this individually. Maybe this might be an assignment that actually might be better individually. But print those off or write them out in a notebook, draw the diagrams in your notebook, whatever you want to do, and then go through and start marking your own behaviors, right? What does preoccupation, for example, look like for you? As therapists, we can both give you, you know, kind of a laundry list of some common things, but kind of going back to my example with the gentleman, you know, who would go on business trips out of town, most people wouldn't necessarily look at that as a preoccupation behavior, but for him, it very much was. And so go through each of those steps and identify, you know, what sorts of rituals, what sorts of behaviors accompany the other parts of my addiction? In what ways do I actually act out? How does the narrowing of the funnel look in my brain? What are some of the first things that go away, right? Some of the things that I'm not able to reflect on or able to hold on. In what ways do I go crazy or insane, literally clinically insane as I go through this process? And then bring those together if you're a couple and start comparing. See if you're able to identify, you know, not just the addict, but you know, partners can be really helpful with this if you guys are in a good place to talk about it. In terms of both identifying, you know, these different pieces, so that we can set that stage for being done with it as quickly as possible, and again, staying out of these two horrible, awful, terrible components of the addiction.
Yeah, I love that exercise. Just start being mindful of how this applies in your life. What kinds of triggers will start sending me toward the funnel? How do I know that I'm starting into the funnel? What are the little behaviors that are more subtle, the little rituals that I engage in that don't seem all that big a deal at first, but I know where they're taking me. So just starting to pay attention to those things is such a big deal. And so it's a lot of it is mindfulness and awareness. I like to say that's better than half the battle, if you can actually start stepping outside yourself and noticing, oh, look at that. I was feeling a little bit stressed after work or bored. I've got the controller in my hand. I'm starting to channel surf. Oh, baby, channel surfing. Yep, there's an early one in my ritual.
Well, if anything, if anything from my childhood taught me anything, it was G.I. Joe telling me that knowing is half the battle. So yeah. I'm probably going to get slammed for a copyright infringement for saying that. Anyway, thanks, everybody. Next week, we're going to kind of dive more into some of the other components of the addiction and start working on some new exciting tools for beating this thing on an individual front and as a couple.
Sounds great. That's all for today. Thanks for joining us. And remember, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. Together, we can do the impossible.
To learn more about Mark and Steve and to listen to more podcast episodes, visit us at pbscpodcast.com. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.